And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about this show is way down south of Birmingham, way up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Number one of the Triple Dipper today is almost like a continuation of a thread that we had going on the Dippers on Friday. Musk on a roll, I called it. Well, it's Musk on a roll part two today because so much more stuff came out just over the weekend. I mean, literally by the time the show was over on Friday, we were already seeing, I think it was dump number three, tranche number three of files coming out. They call them the Twitter files now. And then another one came out on Saturday, and then another one just came out today. So, good Lord, it's hard to even keep up. But what we're finding over and over again is that there was true suppression. It was not a little bit. It was absolutely evident that they knew what they were doing, and they were doing it with an intent to suppress certain stories. And they called it, all kinds of fancy names that sound more like something out of, you know, George Orwell's 1984 novel. I think they called it, content mitigation or, fancy names like that. It was basically saying, we don't like that, so we're going to censor it. Now, here's a question for you to think about. Was it illegal? Arguments are being made both ways. All right, so here's lawyer Phil for a minute. And by the way, I'm not trying to give you legal advice. I'm just trying to tell you what I perceive as being a possibility. But what I see here is that, yes, arguably there were violations of the law. Where? Well, number one, not the least of the possibilities, is the fact that Twitter executives, to include the CEO, Jack Dorsey, actually testified before Congress and said these things were not happening. Okay. If we find out that they were deliberately lying, I mean, it's one thing to say, no, that's not happening, and then you realize later on it was. But did they ever update their testimony? No, they didn't. To our knowledge, they did not. So did they give live testimony that was a lie under oath to Congress? We need to find out. Because if so, I mean, think about what we've been seeing in the last few years with the weaponization of federal authorities. Like General Michael Flynn, pretty much entrapment, led down a road to say certain things. He said what he knew, and then they basically convicted him of allegedly lying to the FBI. Well, okay, if you can be held in contempt for lying to Congress, I'm trying to think who it was they held in contempt not long ago. Was it Roger Stone? Anyway, the reality is this. Legalities, number one, lying openly to federal authorities and or to Congress. Big possibility. Number two, was there an attempt to help tip the scales, like I said in my monologue, in favor of the Biden campaign by hiding the Hunter Biden story, the Hunter Biden laptop story? Phil, I don't know if you can call that a crime. You can if you can count it as what they refer to as a thing of value under election laws. There was actually a complaint made, but this morning when I was resourcing the show, I could not find what the actual results of this were. And so I'm going to have to go back and do some more digging because I ran out of time for my digging this morning. But in October of 2020, right, as we were looking at the upcoming election, the Republican National Committee, according to CNBC, filed a complaint with the Federal Elections Commission saying that the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop arguably was a in-kind contribution to the Biden campaign. If it was done knowingly, with the recognition that it counted as an opportunity for media or for, for that matter, denial of media, did it qualify as a thing of value? And there have been times, this article I've got here from CNBC, dated October of 2020, says the RNC complained to the Federal Election Commission that Twitter's blocking of the New York Post articles on the Hunter Biden laptop amounted to, quote, an illegal corporate in-kind political contribution to former Vice President Biden's campaign, which was then at the time seeking to unseat President Donald Trump. The RNC's complaint said that Twitter was, quote, engaged in arguably the most brazen and unprecedented act of media suppression in the country's history, and was doing so for the clear purpose of supporting the Biden campaign. I think arguably that's correct. Now, they started off, just if you're not familiar, when the whole thing with the Hunter Biden laptop was discovered, the New York Post broke the story. Twitter and other social media outlets saw that as a holy crap moment, and they decided not to let it happen. Well, they were also at the time, though, talking to the FBI and other intelligence officials, which is still boggling my mind. Why were they meeting on a regular basis? I mean, so much so that it became like an inside joke. And some of the articles I've got here, one of the young Twitter executives, a guy named Joel Roth, I think his name is. Yoel Roth. Boy, he's a piece of work. But he literally began to joke about having pretty dicey meetings, you know, and they were saying, talking about Trump, well, yeah, that kind of, it was just, the email traffic back and forth showed a lack of maturity, and you recognize, here's a do-nothing 30-year-old who's never done a hard thing in his life, who's just been given the power of suppression over millions of people who rely upon his platform for news. Okay, that being said, Roth himself has a long history of opposing the Trump administration and conservatives in general. Okay. And he was also arguably meeting with the FBI, who then told them at first that there was some concern about whether the Hunter Biden laptop was legit or whether the sourcing of the information came from a hack. Well, it wasn't a hack. Someone somewhere at the FBI better explain why they had that Hunter Biden laptop in their possession for close to a year and they still said it may have been a hack. At some point, though, Roth and other executives at Twitter, they knew it was not a hack, and they chose to keep it under wraps anyway, chose to suppress it. They chose to go with that party line, even though we now see behind the scenes, they knew that wasn't true. Okay, so then do we have the next piece of illegality? Do we have an in-kind contribution to the Biden campaign when arguably everything they were doing over there was in some sense skewed with differing weights, like I said earlier, to the liberal side of politics? Well, I don't know whatever happened to that complaint. It does not appear that this article I have shows where the outcome was, but apparently it went nowhere. I wonder now if it's possible to bring it back and cite it now. And I don't know that. Someone who's well-versed in election law might be able to give it to me. Okay, that being said, what are we learning in the latest drops? Well, the latest drops have more to do with Donald Trump. If you remember, there was a Hunter Biden laptop suppression story, and then soon after that, he lost the election. Some experts believe that the amount of information in that Hunter Biden laptop, had it been allowed to become a storyline, had they not only suppressed the story, but also deplatformed the New York Post altogether, took the New York Post off of Twitter so they couldn't get their story out. Well, if the rest of the world had known that, would it have benefited the Trump campaign? And some believe it really would have. It was a very close race recall. But then on top of that, after Trump lost the election, say what you want to about that, but after Trump lost the election, then the January 6th events occurred, which, by the way, were not an insurrection, but it's another story. But then soon after that, they took Trump off of the Twitter platform permanently. Interesting. What we're seeing behind the scenes now is it was a violation of their own policy to do so. They chose to do so, knowing full well they hated Trump, and they were looking for any reason to get him off of there. And what we're also seeing is the level to which other Democrats were giving them all kinds of CYA to do it. Here's an article from Fox News, dated yesterday. Twitter files reveal the Trump ban came after Michelle Obama and others pressured the company. Yeah. Former President Donald Trump was banned from Twitter the day after former First Lady Michelle Obama and others demanded the company permanently remove him, according to the newest Twitter files installment. Well, there you have it. Here's her quote. You ready? Michelle Obama, quote, "Now is the time for Silicon Valley companies to stop enabling this monstrous behavior and go even further than they already have by permanently banning this man from their platform." Banning this man. Doesn't even bother acknowledging that he's the president of the United States. Permanently banning this man from their platforms and putting in place policies to prevent their technologies from being used by the nation's leaders to fuel insurrection. She added, "And if we have any hope of improving this nation, now is the time for swift and serious consequences for the failure of leadership that led to yesterday's shame." This from the woman who said after her husband got elected that she was finally proud of America. The files also showed that the aside from Michelle Obama, that they were serious pressure from the Anti-Defamation League, a very liberal organization that is partly responsible for some of the handbooks that are in schools around the nation promoting CRT and gender fluidity for students. Yeah. The files also showed that Twitter had been maintaining what they called a public interest exception. What does that mean? So the bottom line is Twitter had a standing policy that, you know, elected officials at high levels would not get banned like this because they recognize the things they say, while they might be disagreeable or controversial, they provided the basis for public discourse and the public debate. So Twitter had an internal policy. Well, that began to morph. That began to change. Why? Because they hated Trump and they wanted him off. And so they were looking for any excuse. So the emails show now that we have emails that show they were creating justifications to ban Trump. They were seeking a change of policy for Trump alone, distinct from all other political leaders. And they were expressing no concern about free speech or democracy implications from doing a ban like this. Good gosh. In fact, here's Yoel Roth, who says in 2017, there's actual Nazis in the White House. That's the guy who's making the decisions, one of the ones making the decisions. He also told one of his colleagues that in 2022, his goal was to drive change in the world, which is why he decided not to become an academic, but to become an executive at Twitter. Where did Twitter find these people? That's my question. I mean, Boomer, what do they do, man? Do they run an ad and say, if you're liberal and you hate freedom of speech, come work here?
Come on. Yeah. I mean, come on in. The water's fine. Your favorite movie.
It gets bad. And then you have Roth himself getting excited because he wrote an email with all caps. Guess what? Jack just approved a repeat offender for civic integrity, which means they now had abilities to cut people off if they were repeat offenders for what they deemed to be a violation of Twitter policies. Yeah, he was so excited. All caps. He was so excited. He was beside himself. And he just began to look, and he even called it progress with an exclamation point. Okay. They went on to talk about things like, how it confused certain advertising executives, like they didn't know if they were really going to do this because this was a violation of our usual policies. Well, what happened next was Twitter began to move towards dangerous territory of looking for exceptions to policy to fit their ideologies. And that's what happened. I'll get into it in a little more detail here in a minute. Let's go ahead and take the break right now, Booms. We'll do that. We'll come right back. I'm in number one of the Triple Dipper, Musk on a Roll, part two. Be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, listen, I'm going to jump over the text line real quick. I got all kinds of texts in there. Where's the one I just had a moment ago? Yeah. Here it is, Mike from Huntsville. Mike from Huntsville texted in. He goes, my question about suppression on Twitter, can those that work for Twitter and others be charged criminally for withholding medical evidence from patients, and those patients either died or were injured from the vaccines? They suppress the doctors and the evidence from the other side against the vaccines. Can the news media also be sued by the same families? Okay, so that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that question, Mike, but the reality is this. They did cause harm, and I guarantee you someone's going to push that lawsuit, but they're going to have to prove that they didn't rely upon medical advice, because you don't really rely upon Twitter for your prescriptions. But if you literally change the lay of the land, if you can find a means by which doctors were changing what they were doing to avoid being blacklisted on Twitter or something like that, and they advise their patients accordingly, then I could see something coming together. But I don't know that you can prove a direct link to negligence or in some way prove that Twitter was responsible for someone's diagnosis. But yeah, but it's still maddening. And it's not like it's not an ethical violation. I just don't know that we can find true legal liability on that one. And then I had a text. John from Huntsville just wrote the 12 Days of Christmas for Twitter.
It's pretty good.
I'm not going to sing it, but he wrote 12 cans of brilliance, 11 stacks of articles, 10 ruffians of Colin, 9 bowls of anti-woke flakes, 8 tons of inspiration, 7 grand council trumpets, 6 half-eaten donuts, 5 plates of home fries, 4 magical guest speakers, 3 hours of awesome, 2 crazy camels, 1 incomplete dipper, and a belly full of just love coffee. So,
thank you, John.
Thank
I
you,
love
John.
It.
Appreciate you, John. Thank you very much. All right. And Jeff from Indiana heard my spiel earlier about all the food that we had the Saturday night with the paratroopers with the 82nd Airborne Association. He says, darn you, Phil, you gone made me hungry, and I'm trying to stick to my diet. Says, I've lost 9 pounds, and now I've gained some of it back. Not my fault, Jeff. I can't help it if you have to stop over there at Bucky's and get beaver nuggets all the time. But anyway. All right. Listen, let's move back into the topic here. I got a few minutes for the top of the hour. And we're going to carry this one through to the next half hour. And then, by the way, we're going to jump over to Adventures in Woke World. And the bottom of the next hour, 3:30, Amy Beth Shaver is calling in with some thoughts she has on it, which I think are pretty solid based on what she wrote for 1819 News. But, yeah, here's the thing. Washington Times has a piece dated yesterday. It says, executives bent the rules to ban Trump. The newest Twitter files dump. I talked about that briefly a moment ago. But listen, here's a point that one of the 3 reporters who's been allowed the opportunity to access these Twitter files and make their stories out of them, one of them is a guy named Matt Tybee. And Tybee wrote, whatever your opinion of the decision to remove Trump that day, the internal communications at Twitter between January 6th and January 8th have clear historical import. Even Twitter's employees understood in the moment that it was a landmark moment in the annals of speech. That's a great point. There are probably people who are like, thank you, Trump is off Twitter. Okay, you can have that opinion if you like, but let's set it aside for a minute. If you're a liberal and you were crowing about Trump being off Twitter, how would you have felt if they did that to Joe Biden? How would you have felt if they did that about Barack Obama? How would you have felt if they did that about, I don't know, Bernie Sanders? You wouldn't have liked it any better. In fact, you would have been mad. The reality is what they did was they took a world leader. Keep in mind that we've got despots in this world who are allowed to have their Twitter account, and the former president of the United States, who helped guide the Middle East into the Abraham Accords of peace, who controlled our southern border, who brought more fiscal discipline to the White House, who literally stopped bowing on the world stage. We've got the president of the United States, while he was still in office, not after he left, he was still in office until February, banned from one of the largest social media platforms in the world, where literally something like 10% of Americans of a voting age got their news. He's banned. What was my point in this article? Let me go back to it real quick. Tybee revealed that what he called an erosion of standards within the company in the months leading up to the Capitol riot, detailing Twitter's employees' internal debates over censoring election-related content by Trump. So what he saw was a continuing slide. It's like they began to get, you know, kind of full of themselves, and they began to just kind of get more excited about how much control they actually had, and they began to sort of kind of crow about, yeah, meeting with the FBI. Well, let's talk about that, as a matter of fact. Where's that time here? I've got one. Are we there already? All right, we're right at the top of the hour as I search my stack of stuff. Tell you what we'll do. We'll come right back. I'll finish up this segment. Y'all stay tuned. It just gets deeper by the second. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live for hour number two in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hey, the text lines are wide open. I can tell you right now, we got people texting in left and right. You want to join the fun there, just go ahead and text 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. And just if you're texting for the very first time, just text in the word right side. It's all one word, right side. And you'll get an automatic response back from our texting system that basically says something like, hey, right side ruffian, glad you're a part of the team or whatever. And anyway, bottom line is then give us your first name and just where you're from. And so, like, we got a bunch of them right now just recently texting back and forth with Scott from Hoax Bluff, John from Huntsville, Andy from Arab, Mike from Huntsville, JT from Lacey Springs, Tim from Madison, Jeff from Indiana, and then on and down the line. Just text on in, 833-687-4448. That's also our call-in line. If you want to call the show, we'll do that too. Just try to stick to the topics that we're on. We'd appreciate it. So I was talking before the top of the hour on number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Musk on a Roll, Part 2, because we started Musk on a Roll, Part 1, on Friday. So this guy, Yoel Roth, who is one of the Twitter executives. I've seen the guy do interviews. Yes, you talk about a millennial liberal activist, and then picture everything you can. Picture, I mean, in my mind, and I just there's no other way to say this except to say it, just picture Sheldon Cooper from Big Bang Theory, and you're picturing Yoel Roth, all right? And he got real excited. You could tell that they were getting so excited about how important they were. Everybody reads our stuff. We have the control. We can say that, they shouldn't be allowed to hear this. And so that was happening. But then the other piece that we're finding out in great detail right now from these Twitter files is the fact that they were meeting with federal officials. And I want to know more. I want to know who and why. In fact, I saw an interview this weekend with John Ratcliffe, the former director of national intelligence, because one of the Twitter files indicates that there were representatives of the DNI that were meeting with Twitter. And John Ratcliffe said there was no sanctioned meeting with Twitter from the DNI's office. There was none. And so if they were meeting with someone DNI, I want to know who it was. That was Sunday morning on Maria Bartiromo, I believe. So, yeah, that's interesting. But we know the FBI was, and we know that that there was literally an amazing amount of almost weekly meetings. Well, Yoel Roth was getting so excited. He was so impressed with himself. So in one Slack exchange, if you're not familiar, Slack is like a secure means of doing internal emails. You can message each other at work. In one Slack exchange among Twitter employees disclosed in the latest installment of documents, Twitter's Mr. Roth alluded to disguising his interactions with federal officials as generic meetings on his public calendar. Here's his quote. I'm a big believer in calendar transparency, but I reached a certain point where my meetings became very interesting, .. to people, and there weren't meeting names generic enough to cover it. And then he typed in all caps, definitely not meeting with the FBI, I swear. And then on another, he began to have an internal chat. Twitter's policy director, Nick Pickles, strategized with an anonymous employee on how to disguise information that he obtained from federal officials in external communications. Basically saying, yeah, we're getting the stuff from them, but how do we describe FBI and DHS? Can we talk about them as experts? Other internal messages revealed that Mr. Roth met with federal officials from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, as a scandal over Twitter's censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop unfolded in October 2020, just weeks before the election. I'm telling you, folks, this is a freaking mess. A mess. And yet they were telling us all along they weren't doing this. And here's the part I talked about earlier. Was there a legality question? and I believe arguably there was. Not the least of which is, did they lie to federal authorities? Did they lie to Congress? Article here on The Federalist, dated December 9th, reminds us of all the various times in which they literally said, that's not what we're doing, and it was. On July 25th, 2018, the article says, Vice News reported that several prominent Republican politicians like Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, and Matt Gaetz were not showing up in a drop-down menu of automatically suggested searches, even when you typed in their names. In other words, you couldn't find them. Like, where'd they go? A day after the outcry over the apparent shadow batting, two senior officials at Twitter, one was named Gaddy, what was her first name? She's got a foreign name, and I can't, Vijaya Gaddy and Kayvon Bekpour attempted to couch the concerns by co-authoring a blog post that called Setting the Record Straight on Shadow Banning. Here's the quote, we do not shadow ban. You are always able to see the tweets from accounts you follow. Okay, so they're putting it out there in an actual blog post with their name on it as an official statement from Twitter. That's July 2018. The guy, Bekpour, I say guy, I don't know, Kayvon Bekpour, I'm assuming it's a guy. Bekpour assured users that, quote, our behavioral ranking does not make judgments based on political views. Okay. In August of 2018, Jack Dorsey, who was the CEO of Twitter at the time, phoned into Sean Hannity's radio show telling listeners, we do not shadow ban according to political ideology or viewpoint or content, period. Okay. September of 2018, a month later, in a congressional hearing, Texas Republican Joe Barton asked Dorsey from Twitter if Twitter discriminated against conservatives. The answer, no. This is to Congress now. No. Our policies and our algorithms don't take into consideration any affiliation, philosophy, or viewpoint. In the same hearing, Representative Mike Doyle asked if Twitter is rigged to censor conservatives. No, Dorsey responded. Are you censoring people? No, Dorsey answered again. Twitter shadow banning Republicans, is that true? Doyle pressed. No. It went on and on and on, writing more op-eds, writing blog posts, putting out the word on radio shows, and even testifying before Congress that they weren't doing what we can now see they were doing. Well, folks, I'm just going to tell you, there's a great article here, and I've got so many articles that I don't know that I need to get into all of them. But the reality is this. We're looking at a free speech issue. The question is going to be, how much accountability can we bring when they're going to claim they hide behind Section 230 of the, what's it called? Section 230 of the Internet Decency Act, I believe it is. Anyway, the bottom line is, it was a law put in place originally to keep pornography out of the hands of kids. And what it did was it allowed them to, quote unquote, moderate their content. If something offensive like child pornography or pornography in general was put up, they could have it taken down because it was on their platform. Their platform has become so much bigger. Their platform has become the place now where literally 10% of America, maybe more by now, goes to get its actual news. And they know that. And when they have become the de facto public square, do they have a higher burden? Do they have a duty of any kind? And those are legal terms. Is there a burden? Is there a duty? And what is it, ideally? Well, we know they can't lie to Congress. There's that. And we know they can't just give away free space to political candidacies. That's a violation of election law. But what about just literally changing the narrative? What about looking out there and saying, we won't let you talk about COVID treatments unless it's inside the narrative we want? What about things like Hunter Biden's laptop can't be talked about? What about things like, banning an entire president of the United States' account? When do we find accountability on that? Was there a legal violation? Jonathan Turley, and I'll end with this. Jonathan Turley says that we're looking at right now that with the new Twitter files, an article here on thehill.com, which came out on Saturday, with new Twitter files, Musk forces a free speech reckoning for politicians and pundits. He says these latest Twitter files shatter the past denials of shadow banning. And it literally includes actual denials under oath before Congress and public denials by top executives. Yet a far more significant problem, he says, is already confirmed in these files, the existential threat of corporate censors to free speech. And that's where we are. That's when you look at 1984 by George Orwell, when Big Brother decided what you were allowed to think and what you were allowed to hear and what was allowed to be said about the things that Big Brother cared about. And I'll be honest with you. I'm anxious to see what kind of accountability could come out of this. All right, that's enough of that. We're going to come right back, spend a little time doing something different. But folks, I'm going to tell you, keep your eyes on this because I'm going to tell you, you're not. I have no idea what's coming in the next round of Twitter files, but I bet there's more. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.